What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Beyond the gaslit streets of Edwardian London, tucked away in the shadowed corners of the National Laboratory of Psychical Research, one man stood at the intersection of science and the supernatural. Known as a self-styled ghost hunter, he was a figure as polarizing as the phenomena he chased. A master of deception who dedicated his life to unmasking the fraudulent while desperately seeking the one miracle he couldn't debunk. From the infamous talking mongoose of the Isle of Man to the bone-chilling corridors of Borley Rectory, the most haunted house in England, he brought the precision of a clockmaker and the flair of a showman to the seance room. He didn't just tell ghost stories, he measured them. With infrared cameras, mercury switches, and sealed chambers, he attempted to trap the ethereal in the nets of the material world. Was he a brilliant pioneer of parapsychology, or a sophisticated charlatan who knew exactly how to manipulate the media and the spirits alike? This case file joined the theorists as we step behind the velvet curtain and into the laboratory of the legendary Harry Bryce.
Welcome to Alien Theorists Theorizing. I'm Braden.
I'm Zell.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Andrew. And
today we're talking about fucking Creed. Our boy Harry P.
Talking about Creed.
Creed, yeah.
Harry Price.
Dude, actually, into this guy, I didn't realize he is basically the reason why we all hunt ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he's like the OG fucking...
The OG, the
ghost hunter. Yeah.
This is, it's very much so. He is the Ghostbuster. The original...
Yeah, dude, it's so funny because it's like his early work. This guy's like fucking huge, been like just debunking, and then like he's like, yeah, maybe there's some cool stuff. They're like, fuck you, there is no stuff. And you're like, holy shit, what a switch up on this guy.
Yeah,
poor Harry P.
Harry P. is our Harry Price.
Harry P. From now on, for the rest of the episodes, it's Harry P.
It's Harry P. Yeah, Harry P.
Harry Price from here on, we will refer to as Harry P. is an interesting figure, and I think we've mentioned him because we definitely talked about his famous
Jeff
case.
The Talking Mongoose.
Dude. Yes, he was featured in Jeff the Talking Mongoose. So we have talked about him before, and I'm glad that we got to finally kind of
comes full circle.
Yeah, so he's a very polarizing figure in ghost hunting paranormal history. To a lot of people, he is the father of modern ghost hunting.
OG Zach Bagans, basically.
Yeah, he's not. Yeah, everybody thinks it's Zach Bagans and the Taps guys from Ghost Adventures and
no
ghost
Harry
hunters.
P.
No, it's Harry P. you know, he was doing it before it was cool, or made it cool, I guess you could say. But there's other people on the other side that think he was a charlatan. They think that he is very much like just a guy who did anything to get into the headlines. You know, a perpetrator of general flammery and bamboozlement. Grifter. You know, this
guy. Flammery. That's a great term.
There are accusations that like the stuff he investigated, he helped, you know, exaggerate, right?
Yeah, there's stuff there are allegations from credible from credible organizations that would, or you know, some say rival organizations.
I don't think so.
Harry Price is very much a man who is steeped in these kinds of things, where it's like there's like professional rivalries in the ghost hunting community at that time, and which is an interesting thing. We'll get to talk about it, but it's really undeniable to about his impact on the kind of the paranormal investigatory scene, and where a lot of this stuff comes from. Like he has a, like a permanent staple in the, what is it? Is he has the Harry Price Library of Magical Literature.
Dude, he's the founder of the Magic Circle.
He's not the founder of the Magic Circle.
Like, I thought he was the founding member of the Magic Circle.
I don't think
no
so.
Way, man.
It's been around since 1905. Like,
well, he's a prominent member of the Magic Circle then in the preservation of magic. The crazy thing is, this guy loved that shit. Like, he loves it.
Yeah.
And like his claim to fame early on is like debunking this stuff.
That's the whole thing, man. It's like he wants it to be real, and he so gets mad at the people that fucking, you know, take away from it by having these fucking silly hoaxes and bullshit.
Right. Or he genuinely believes in these things that they do exist.
He was like To Catch a Predator, but with fucking
Chris Hansen of fucking magic.
Have a seat.
Yeah, have a seat.
Magicians are coming in.
But he does have like
a 13-year-old. And here comes Harry B. Have a seat.
I see you've been channeling the spirit of a 13-year-old girl.
Buddy, I don't know what you talk about, buddy.
Like I was mentioning before, he has one of the large, like his organization that he founded, that was the Society for Paranormal, National Laboratory of Psychical Research. His tenure of like overseeing that organization, like they accumulated like over 13,000 editions, and a lot of them are claimed to be like first editions of just like remarkable and unique books and pamphlets that were devoted all to things like, you know, like ghosts, mediumship, esotericism, like all of these books that you wouldn't find anywhere. And like they have like they're permanently, I think, in like the Library of London, or I think one of those places.
It's their library is actually Harry Potter. What was that girl? What was the girl who wrote the book?
J.K. Rowling.
She got her inspiration for that fucking that library straight from them. So when you're thinking of a library, it's got like twisty shelves and like a sliding ladder that goes around the whole thing. I'm pretty sure that's true. I'm pretty sure I read that somewhere.
It's what it looks like. And his all of these
leather bound books. Some of them are actually in human flesh.
Human skin, Necronomicon for sure in there somewhere.
Dried human skin, definitely.
But he was definitely in the, since he was around like in the 1920s, like they had the first like broadcast, TV broadcast of kind of discussing this stuff and bringing, you know, ghost hunting and, paranormal investigations to the masses, essentially, first broadcast experiment of firewalking, first live broadcast from an actual believed to be haunted house. You know, the first ghost hunter, ghost adventure, like is Harry Price. He was born January 17th, 1881 in London, England.
Put him right in the time of Jack the Ripper? When was Jack the Ripper?
You'd have to look it up.
Jack the Ripper. Is he Jack the Ripper?
Is he Jack the Ripper? I don't think so.
Anyone in that time.
It was like
summer
and autumn of 1888.
He'd be like 8 years old.
Yeah.
Hey, Baby Ripper.
Baby Ripper.
We've already figured out. We know who Jack the Ripper was. Sorry, they did it. They pulled the fucking DNA off of the fucking, I'm assuming, bonnet or some shit.
Wait, we know who it is?
Yeah, they know. They've tracked down, they've tracked it down through like 23andMe. They pulled the DNA and was able to go back, and it was some, I can forget. Like,
how did they get the DNA from someone from 1888?
Dude, someone just fucking put it in.
It was something that, it was an artifact that they had in the museum, or whoever was keeping hold of the artifact. So they took the, it was some type of woman's gown, and they always assumed that it was the victim's blood. But when they looked at it, it had both the victim and a male's fucking blood in it. And they were able to track that blood to somebody who was close to the case and all this shit.
So Jack the Ripper, I'm solved. Dude,
okay, listen, I shouldn't even, this, I read this fucking article years
ago. I believe you. So. No, I believe you. It's good. That's good enough for me. They've solved Jack the Ripper.
Yeah.
It's not Harry Price.
It's not Harry Price. Not Harry Absolutely Price. Absolutely not. 8-year-old Confirmed. Harry Price.
Yeah. Most of his early life, I think, is fairly unremarkable. Grew up in like a, grew up with like a well-to-do family, and like, I guess kind of like the, what we considered like the suburbs of London at that time. He completed his, you know, went to a lot of fairly, I guess, influential schools, and he completed his education at Goldsmiths College. And while he was studying chemistry.
How easy do you think school was back then? Like, if we were to time travel back.
Way harder, dude.
You think way harder?
Dude, way worse. Harder.
You're getting fucking beat by your teacher regularly.
Even school from like in the 60s was way harder. Now they just let kids pass. Like, you don't have to do any work. Oh, they just push you through because it's racist if you fail them.
Nobody fails anymore. It's not a thing.
Yeah, it's true. There's like no standard, and there would be no standards of learning really back then. I guess they'd just be whatever that people feel. If you're dumb, then you're not going to pass, I suppose.
Imagine you're doing math or making you use a fucking abacus.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, fuck,
like, no, you're learning. Yeah, you're bullshit. Learning calculus on a freaking
long form by hand. Everything
crazy.
Damn it,
Harry Price might have been in that club. He was a chemistry and photography and electrical and mechanical engineering nerd. I guess like
they must have been super fucking rich because if you're not wealthy at this point in time, you're working at the age of fucking like 12.
Yeah,
not even
not yeah, studying the like arts.
Nine. Yeah,
you're like, get a trade.
Harry P. thought, I guess he has like a biography that he wrote himself, and then he said that kind of his interest in the paranormal and the supernatural, I guess he said probably was set off by his encounter of the great Sequa, who was a I guess like a
when he was 15.
The great Sequa, I guess, was a performer and entertainer. He was traveling with a traveling circus, and then Harry Price said
he just
that
did some close up card magic, and he's like, "Holy I think, shit!" Yeah.
His fucking made it look like his finger came off. Like,
yeah,
It's sometime around 1889, and I guess Harry thought that, or at least he believed that the great Sequa was responsible for curing his toothache that he had at the time. And that began his lifelong, you know, obsession with the paranormal, magic and esoteric arts, so to say. So he married into wealth. I think his wife's family was fairly
nice,
fairly
well-to-do.
When his father died, he inherited like the family business. And a lot of people say like this is why, like he when he was kind of well off at this point, he had the ability to go in and look at these things, you know, the leisure to kind of go into this.
Do his
stuff.
Passion project.
Yeah.
Early on, he was just debunking. Like, he was just like,
right,
researching and then being like, this is fake. He was basically ruining. He was like Penn and Teller. You know what I mean? He's like, he's just telling everyone the secrets. He's like, no. They didn't actually chop her in half.
He definitely got involved even with the debunking because he was passionate about it to begin with.
Yes. Right?
Like, he's, as a kid, he's passionate about fucking magic and
he became like, he became like a fairly adept, like, conjurer. Like, he became like a real magician. Like, he
was a sorcerer.
We mentioned before he was at least qualified enough to join the Magic Circle, which is an actual organization, like an actual organization of magicians that had been in founded in London in 1905, and it was designed to promote the art of magic. Like, that's, and well, he keep said the secrets.
It's said that he wanted to join that because he wanted to learn like every trick he could, like every sleight of hand trick, and know everything he was looking for. So when he went to look at some of these fucking fraudsters, he'd be like, well, I mean, that's how they did it. There was a magnet under the table. He pushed the Ouija board around, which next Halloween, I'm going to try that, actually. It's a good idea.
Well, and you got, like, again, it's when you're looking at this case, you got to look at it from the like perspective of, I think too many people look at it as this guy's like a poo-pooer. And it's like, no, this guy was so passionate about it. And I was like, man, it parallels us in a lot of ways where you like, you 100%. Love UFO cases.
We're the same.
You look into UFO cases, you start and you're like, okay, a lot of these are fucking bullshit. Once you start and you're like, there are some real gems mm-hmm. that you're like, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't add up. But a lot of it, the slog in between is just, you're like, nah, this is too similar. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't add up. And he's kind of the same in that way, where he's like, look, he wants to find real magic, which is what I find happens to him later in his life. So baffling. The second he's like, hey, I found some cool stuff. Fuck, you didn't. You fraudster. Piece I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, even
well,
even
he's
the
already
magic.
Got a certain group of followers, right? Like he's built a following around him debunking. And then
yes,
he goes, it's like
right.
Bob Dylan suddenly fucking going from acoustic to plugging in. Playing electric. He got booed off the fucking stage, man.
Don't do that.
At least with the magic circle, like he was, yeah, his passion kind of pushed him into what they had the occult committee, which they had formed actually in that organization, which was specifically formed to investigate and debunk supernatural claims. Because, you know, around the 1920s, what's big around then? We've talked about it before. Like, this is the big spiritualism boom. So everybody's, you know, everybody's a medium. Everybody's conjuring up, you know, ancient pharaohs and, you know.
Oh, yeah. Mummy. People. When were they eating mummies? When
are we smoking our ancestors here?
Yeah. Everybody's snorting mummy dust and all that super fun stuff. But he... Harry was unique in that committee because unlike a lot of his fellows, he would actually like endorse mediums, like spiritual mediums, who he thought were actually genuine. That kind of, you know, crossed, you know, checked off all his, you know, bullshit stuff. And he was like, yeah, this guy is actually legit. Like this guy is probably actually summoning. This guy's actually communicating with the dead, or I just don't know how he's doing it. And that's, you know, that's what it came down to a lot of times.
That's the one thing, like when Braden talks about that big shift that near the end, he becomes a believer. Like throughout everything I read it sounded like he was definitely like the ones that he couldn't explain. Right. He was never, there's definitely something here. It's, I can't explain what's going on. Right. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, he's not really, he knows something's not right. He doesn't necessarily believe it. Right. But he's saying, I can't explain why. Right. Like, I don't know how they're doing it.
To speak of some of his, you know, more polarizing work, I guess he got involved with the Society of Psychical Research, which this organization, which was founded in 1882 by a bunch of Cambridge scholars, a bunch of, you know, smarty dudes, was the first serious organization to actually examine the paranormal using scientific methods. You know, back when the scientific method was coming into its own, you're like, okay, we can do a lot of testable science now. We can use a lot of the tools and things that we've developed to analyze these claims that have always been around, you know, since the beginning of human history, you know,
it's very Egon Spence
augury and all those kinds of, yeah.
Right? Like
and that's what they
legit
were.
Legit scientists.
And to some people that would have been considered, you know, at least back then it can be seen as like a bit of a weakness because they would be
Spengler, not fucking Spence.
They would take forever to do their investigations. They were very slow. They were very cautious. And this was their like general approach to it. And they would like write these incredibly dry, incredibly long analyses of their investigations. And then they would just
taking it serious, right? Yeah. Like they were trying to write it as serious as possible. They weren't pandering. They're not writing it to sensationalize or anything. They're trying to take a subject that they're passionate about and try to be as serious and professional about it as they can.
Yeah. So they're publishing like academic papers. And,
yes.
Like,
and they're doing that. So people take them seriously. Like it's a lot of like, it's funny because a lot of things that you see now, that's a lot of criticism of like, oh, it's for TV. That's why it's never like, it's just real, you would study these things. And it's like, but this guy was doing that. And they're like, this is fucking boring. Like, where's the jump scares?
And that was very much what Price came in with, the flashiness and the immediate, and what some people would say the media driven, when he came in and he started kind of coming into his own while he was involved with the Society of Psychical Research, he would B, like, we need to get stuff out there. We need to get people excited. We need people coming in here. We can't just like write these really long papers. Like, he would take out ads and stuff in the Daily Mirror. And it's like, we need to have it in the headlines by Tuesday morning. And then this is going to get, you know, that'll get us more attention. That'll get us more
money. Money to look at these things.
Yeah, it gets more funding to actually look at this and get people involved in it and get everybody to really see what we're actually doing. And this definitely formed a schism between him and a lot of the kind of, I guess they saw him as kind of like nouveau riche when he came in, because he wasn't dumb. Harry Price was not dumb. Like, he wasn't a guy
He was educated. We went through. Yeah. You know, how he grew up. He was affluent. He was able to go to school. And
yeah, he had knowledge of these testing methods. Like, he's educated in chemistry and electrical and mechanical engineering. He knew his ways around the tools and all of these things. And they very much saw him. A lot of these guys were kind of like old money, and they kind of came in and being like, you know, and they're not like, they're all very. Exactly. They're just kind of like, you know, and they're, you know, looking down on him when he's like, oh, you're just making a spectacle of all this and whatever. You're not taking it as seriously as we are. Yeah. So to such extent that, you know, eventually it's like they either forced out or, you know, I guess Harriet left and he formed his own. He's like, well, okay, fine. I'm going to make my own research organization, Blackjack and Hookers, like, you know, yeah. The National Laboratory of Psychical Research came around. And even though it says the National Laboratory of Psychical Research, which sounds awesome, like, it wasn't an official like government office. Even it says the National Laboratory, like, it wasn't a thing. It was just kind of Harry just running out like a basement somewhere in South Kensington. And he filled it with some equipment and stuff.
Basement and garages are where all great things start.
It's where it all starts.
I agree.
There's a lot of historians about who have opinions about Harry Price who felt like this was his kind of like way to flex on the SPR, the Society of Psychical Research. And he kind of built his own little, he felt like they were under equipped actually. So he was like, we're not implementing all of the cool shit that we're making right now, which is a lot of it was probably like, you know, electrical panels. And like, we've got all these things.
Honestly, like, he has
all this stuff. Yeah.
He has a little bit of private wealth now too. So it's like, he can kind of bankroll this project probably better than the last society was using the money, especially if he had to answer to like a committee or something about where money should go. And he's like, there's too much fucking red tape in the ghost hunting. I need to cut this down.
You're a loose cannon. You're a loose cannon, Harry Price.
Harry Price is definitely a loose cannon.
He had a lot of cool toys, actually.
Your EMF and your badge.
He made a lot of cool stuff with his
salt shaker of holy salt.
Put your crucifix on the desk on your way out. One
filled with holy water.
Yeah. He was probably well versed in the old ways of, you know, those kinds of spiritual mediumship and esotericism. But he also had a lot of cool new gear, which is very Ghostbuster-esque, that he kind of invented himself, or just like he utilized a lot of like, you know, what would have been like, you know, cutting edge tech at the time. He had one thing called the couple of different, like, his gear was pretty cool. He had a thing called the telekinetoscope he used, which was like, I guess it would have been like the proto, what is it, the ghost box that they use at hunting. And it was basically a telegraph key, the little thing that you dee, 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 like that thing. And then it would be that when it was depressed, it would turn a red light on. And then but what he would do is he'd put a glass dome on top of it and covered the key. So like, you know, nothing could touch it.
Right? He'd say, nobody touch this.
Exactly. You know? And then, so if somebody claimed psychic powers, you're like, okay, make that.
Press the button.
Yeah, make that press the button. You know, that's like original. Or, you know, you take it to a haunted house and you ask questions, and you know, it's two beeps for yes and one beep for no or whatever. But you could use it. I mean, that's one of the things that he developed himself. He had a thing called like an electrical control system, where it was like, if you had like a medium, and you had a seance circle. Every person on the circle had to sit on these special pads or like hold these metal contacts so that anybody who broke the circuit by moving their hand or anything like that, because, you know, a lot of times when you do these seances, you know, the frauds, a lot of times, like, they'll move their feet or something to make a noise or something like that. And
they'll shuffle, like, yeah.
Yeah, or like take like go like
pre-record voices so that it plays on a soundtrack while you're.
Or like if they're like trying to get the, like
you won't let it go. Eh? You can't believe it was real. You can't believe it was real. I was like, what the fuck?
That was real. That was real. Like, Harry Price would have been like, "That's real. That really."
Dude,
happened.
It was so good at a point that I actually thought I was like, "Wait, it sounded so good." I was like, "Did we actually do that?"
I knew. I remember specifically saying, "Myself, what button did you just press?"
Yeah, you said, "What's that button you're pushing with your pinky?" Never. The one that says "fuck with Andrew."
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we didn't have an electrical control system, so we didn't know.
Didn't do it. I don't know what you're talking about. Oh, dude!
All time, probably still all time number one prank I've been a part of.
Very hurtful.
I can understand why people do these prank shows.
Of someone who trusts you. Wholeheartedly.
Well, I mean, when there's chores to be done, when there's pod chores and you negate to help with the pod chores.
Oh, yeah. What was that? Because I had to fucking take care of my child.
No excuse. That. We all have kids now.
Excuses. You've got a kid. The podcast's got to be a priority. You got to be here at 7 a.m.
You're milking it.
I got a kid. I can't do nothing.
We all got kids now.
Yeah.
We know you were milking it.
Hence why, dude, we all get kids and now we don't have pod weeks anymore. Weird.
I could have a pod week.
I can have a pod week.
Yeah,
if you lived here,
fucking could.
I can have a pod week.
I got.
I have pod week right now.
Yeah.
I know. I have a pod week every week. It's just not with you guys. I got two or three shows in here a week.
Lady pod.
No, they're long. Those fucking bitches are long gone. Too bad though, because they did pay.
They just started fighting. The infighting, is that what got them?
One girl fucking henpecked everyone to death, and now she does a show with her husband instead.
Oh, yeah. That'll happen. The classic group lady podcast arc.
Just started up strong, slowly pecked each other to death. And then,
yeah, no one can take it.
And now she's with her husband.
And they probably all hate each other.
A marriage rekindling experiment, which is a podcast.
It ends in divorce.
It was a whole thing. I lived like a fucking... like a reality show where the guy was having an affair with a secretary. Like the whole thing.
Jesus.
It was this whole fucking thing, dude. So funny.
And they aired that on the pod?
Behind the scenes. Oh. Well, no, she did air it because they did a whole episode of their marriage rekindling.
Oh, yeah.
It was a whole fucking thing. Anyways.
The classic hot mom pod.
Instead of going to therapy, we're going to do a podcast together.
Instead of doing ghost hunting, they had a marriage rekindling experiment. They should have went ghost hunting, though.
They were 100% done. They should have time.
They should have tried to rekindle their relationship while ghost hunting.
Yeah,
that would have fucking show.
Yeah. That would have worked.
Yeah, imagine they went to a haunted house and they're scared. She kind of falls back into his arms. I protect you, right? You know what I mean? That's way better.
100%.
Than just sitting across from each other and being like, "So we're gonna talk about you cheating," and then put it out there for everybody. That sounds like a good time.
But yeah, Harry Price had all the toys for ghost hunting and a lot of setups that they had at their, I was watching like the interview that they had with him for like 1922 or something. Like there was like the interview and like they showed like his little laboratory with all of their little setups and equipment. So a ton of like voice recording gear they had, like, you know, for, like I said, that time it was cutting edge, but like, you know, a dictaphone, they had a bunch of, you know, advanced photography and lighting mechanisms, a lot of little clever setups that they would do, you know, kind of for when they would have seances and they'd have like a medium that had, you know, legit claims. They'd be like, "Hey, come over to our, you know, our setup and test your shit and see if you're legit."
It's legit. Like when you look at all the stuff they were doing, basically they were doing like, they did the prototype for like every ghost hunt and ghost hunt show. Like uses basically all the stuff that these guys were using and trying to use back
in
the
day. And there's some that are like, there was like one simple one that I was like, "Wait, why don't fucking ghost hunters use that shit?" So like, and we'll talk about Borley Rectory in a minute, but it's like one of the things that they would do when they would do ghost investigations or haunting investigations, they had like a whole kit. But one of the things that they have is like, they would just use like chalk. They would take chalk and they would just draw the outlines of like where objects were at night to see if they moved. And I was like, damn, that's actually pretty smart.
Yeah, dude. I was like,
if you got a poltergeist and you're like, okay, draw chalk out the outlines of all the objects, everything. Like both of everything. And then if it moves, then you know, oh, you got a fucking pet. You got a
something's going on. And, yeah. I was like, know. That was so good. The other one that I was like, I never see enough is the fucking steel tape and wax seal the doors. They would seal rooms. Yeah. They'd be like, oh, they'll wax seal rooms. And they'll be like, all right, well, if the door opens, we know someone fucking opened the door. No one opened the door after we seal it. And like, so they just fucking like wax seal all the like door. I was like, that's fucking, why don't they do that? And then, cause in that's too a great effective. One. That one's a great one because you're like, haunted house, perfect. We're going to take it over. We're just going to wax, first off, we're going to wax seal every fucking door and then we're going to come back in like a week and just check. Yeah. Right?
Versus like, first of all, I feel attacked.
Yeah. I'm allergic to wax.
Yeah. And like, yeah, and they use stuff like, you know, starch and graphite powder to dust for fingerprints and things like this. And often they found that the, you know, a lot of the fingerprints often match the medium's own fingerprints. Like, why did this... the fingerprints of this girl who you claim died in the 14th century has the same fingerprints you do. That's crazy.
She's like, yeah, I would have got away with the two if it wasn't for all your fucking money and evidence-based gadgets. Research.
And you know, along with his career, like, you know, we'll probably get into it in a second, but we might just want to take a break and then
short
we'll
beer
get
break.
Into a lot of the famous, the more
we'll be back.
Some of the highlights coolest, of his famous careers. Stuff. All right, we'll be right back.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Prenuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage 1. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Prenuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
We're back.
Harry Price definitely had some hits. Like a lot of his experiments were always kind of, because he was such a showman, I think a lot of his experiments like had just the wildest things that you're just like, damn, like what the fuck? Like he did one, I guess, to go through some of his highlights of his career. You had one called, I thought was especially kind of fun, the Brocken experiment in 1932. So this one, Harry actually traveled to Brocken Mountain in Germany, and he claimed that he had found an ancient manuscript that described a Blocksberg tryst. And it was a ritual where you would turn a goat into a man.
Oh, I thought it was a man into a goat. Ooh, but
or man into a... No, it was a goat into a man. Because I was going to see
either way. Yeah, goat, I saw the legend so of goat man comes
I found yeah. a way to turn goat, a goat, goat into a man.
Into a man. So... Harry,
have I ever told the story of Goatman
before? He's like, behold, behold my assistant.
Have you ever heard the story of Goatman?
I think we've definitely talked about Goatman on this.
Screaming Goatman's a real fucking enough, haunted man. Legend.
Fucking goats are a haunted legend. Like,
dude, goats, I've been goats. Haunted by goats before. We grew up with a goat named Henry. He was a motherfucker.
Probably beat the shit out of you, didn't he?
Dude, you make eye contact with that bastard, he dropped you instantly.
Yeah, because he used to be a guy, and now he's mad that he's a goat.
Dude, a goat man would be so funny. Where you just spook him and he fucking stiff as a board. Yeah, he goes.
Fainting. Just headbutts you in the sternum.
Harry had insisted that he had found this spell and he was going to follow it out to the letter, you know, even to the fact to the parts where it said you needed a virgin goat, which I guess you didn't
think. How do you check?
I don't know.
Which goats have fucking hymens?
Goat hymens?
You also need a pure maiden, apparently, he's like, as well.
He's so. In there.
The goat hymen is still intact. And it hasn't torn through vigorous stretching or activity yet.
Oh, I don't know why I find that way too funny. It's like, we need a virgin goat.
How do you fucking figure out a virgin goat?
Well, I guess it could have been a male. Like, would you ask if it's a male goat? Like, hey, you've been
I don't know how you'd figure it out. Don't know how you know.
Lying to me.
You're like, nerd.
So then you needed there that, and you needed a pure maiden and a some kind of specific ointment that they needed to put on the goat. So it's just like, you imagine this picture of just Harry, you know, middle age at the time.
Virgin goat.
On this German mountain. Fair, you know, a bunch of people with like torches and stuff and standing around in a circle. And he's like putting this, you know, this ointment, this salve on the goat, just like sitting there. And I guess like they would throw the sheet over the goat, because I think I saw a video of it, and it's like you would throw the sheet over the goat and it's supposed to turn into a man. Yeah. That's what they didn't play the final countdown. That's why it didn't work. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you need to have the theme song there.
But it was a fairly big to do, because Harry Price was known at that time. And you had like 70 international journalists at this event that he had got there. Goat stayed a goat. That's it.
Or a seder?
Not even a halfway. Yeah, not even a halfway seder. Just regular goat.
Centaur's half horse. Seder's half goat.
Yes.
Okay. Who fucked the goat? Who fucked the goat?
But I guess
It was gonna work. Someone fucked the goat.
To Harry, this was a success. that it didn't turn into a man, being that, you know, that his whole thing was like, science requires testing. You can have these magic spells, and it's like, yeah, you gotta test for hymens. Do them,
goat hymens.
You know, like,
that's science, dude. We had a fucking guy here in Vernon recently, real close, grabbed a stool and was looking for horse.
Dude,
hymens.
Dude, he was fucking horses.
He was a guy fucking a horse, dude.
Dude, oh, legit, my God. Guy in Vernon, British Columbia, gets caught on fucking, dude, the worst part is, he's like doing foreplay with the horse. He's like walking it and like petting it. And then it's like the next shot, you see him with the stool and then him standing behind it. And they're like, and then it cuts to like the owner and he's like, he sexually assaults my horse.
Just, and now this is premeditated. The guy brought his own stool, dude.
Yeah.
He like, didn't
he's,
have
just, he's been there. He knows what he's doing, man.
Don't look it up.
It's wild. It's a real story. It's fucked.
It's fucking wild.
Those fucking these sickos are out there. That's why it's hard when you get yourself a fucking virgin goat. You got to protect it.
You got to make sure.
He busted a number of, what was it, ghost photographers.
Busted a what?
Busting makes me feel good. That's it's in the song. Yeah,
that's about the goats, if you didn't know.
The goats and the ghosts. It wasn't ghosts. It's goat busters. It's not goat busters.
That was the original.
What are they busting?
Yeah. Well, I'll leave that up to your imagination. Yeah. You take that wherever you want to go. I guess he a number of, you know, ghost photographers or claimed ghost photographers, which was, what was it? Spirit photography was really big back then. You know, Skull Lion, our friend of the show,
Timmy
Skull
Boy,
Lion,
was not the first to invent spirit photography. A lot back then, it was like, you know, people would sit for photos, and some people would claim that, oh, I could take photos with my special camera, and then we can have spirits sitting next to you.
You want to see a ghost with one of those cameras? You just like twist it sideways while you're taking a fucking picture.
Yeah. I see that behind. There was a couple occasions I think he caught a bunch of those, or at least I think the most prominent one, I can't remember exactly, can't remember the name of the ghost photographer, but he had been famous for that, and he busted him by basically just switching out the panels that they used for a thing, because he figured out that they were pre-exposed, you know, to whatever.
Dude, he was literally just figuring out how other people were hoaxing. Like, that's
figuring out the magic tricks. He's like, I've seen this before. And he'd be like, boom, and then nail him with it. And then it's like, yeah, you're
there was talk of him maybe being, he dabbled a bit in the sleight of hand stuff back in the day, right? Like, that's, we didn't really talk about that, but he was a magician.
He learned it all.
He dealt with antiquities.
Antiquities.
He dealt with antiquities and stuff, which ended up turning out to be fake, which he got busted for. Right. So, like, he dabbled a little bit. So I'm wondering.
No one's perfect.
Well, I'm wondering about this fancy fucking SPR, the Society for Psychical Research. Uh-huh. Like, is this a Frank fucking, was his name Frank Abernathy, like Catch Me If You Can situation? Where they fucking bust him and they're like, you're so fucking good, we got to recruit you to bust these fucking guys, right? Like, and who's better to bust them, right? That's literally what they did. Was it the CIA gave the dude a job?
It's like those computer hackers who bust into like bank systems and they get
like
fucking
fake too. Like the whole thing was fake.
Pretty, yeah, it was grossly exaggerated. Was just like Wolf of Wall Street too, apparently.
Harry was, he was a prestidigitator. Like he was good with magic. Like he knew the tricks. Like he had studied magic. He was in the
prestidigitator,
the magic circle. Like he knew other magicians and their tricks. And yeah, so he was aware of these things and how to fool people and how easy it was. I mean, I'm sure the magic circle had people like, what is it? Mentalism, like those mentalist tricks. And a lot of those things are all kind of like just how to manipulate people into doing these things. So he was aware of a lot of the tricks that they do and dealing with antiquities. He probably had, because a lot of it was like, what was it? The little boxes. Like a lot of times they'd have these in one interview, that one interview I watched with him, he showed like this box. It was like a magic box that you would put something in there, or the medium would put something in there during a seance and be like, okay, you know, we're going to summon up the spirits, whatever. I'm going to lock this box and we're going to put it in the middle of the table. Nobody can touch it or whatever. We're going to turn the lights off. And then they turn the lights back on after they do the seance and they open the box. It was locked the whole time, right? Well, he takes the box, like he shows, he's like, no, there's like this type of box. Like you can take out a little pin here, which looks like an actual, like, a, you know, just holding part of the box. You pull the pin out and then you can actually open the box. And then you put it back down, you push the pin back in and then it looks like it's locked again. So he had a lot of those kinds of little like tricks and those like props and stuff that he'd be like, he's like, I know how these work. You know, because I am a magician. So he's like, what is it? Randy, he's like James Randi, the guy, Randy the Magnificent or whatever. Like he was the original, he was also a magician who was known for debunking and stuff like that. Very similar. But it's like, yeah, he was like that kind of guy just going around and trying his best, I think, to just, you know, weed out, I think, to him.
He was trying to find, like, he wanted, he was like, trying to find the legit. He wanted to find legit stories, which makes his next, like, venture into the Borley
Rectory.
Like, rectory. So interesting to me because the rectory was a large Victorian Gothic revival house in Borley, Essex, England, built in 1863, and basically long history of like all the tenants and everyone lived here seeing like apparitions, ghosts.
Oh, dude, it's fucking hot. So the original place, right? The old Gothic fucking manor. Say the word again, Dan.
Rectory.
Rectory, which is basically the house for the priest, which is mm-hmm. like on the property mm-hmm. with the
that's why church. I'm getting a different vibe from that name, obviously. I guess.
Rectory. Yeah. So yeah, fucking. But so yeah, the original one ended up getting torn down, and they rebuilt this elaborate like castle on it. And ever since that, they disturbed the earth, and this thing burnt down. This is when they started having these encounters, but like. It's not just people have been seeing encounter, but there's like there's a tale that goes along with this fucking place.
Spooky tale.
Yeah. Well, it's crazy, but allegedly it's a tale of a secret affair.
Oh, shit.
So
get him on a podcast.
Yeah. Like, so apparently a monk and a nun, which obviously, right? Like, you can't get together.
As you do. It's like doctor and nurse.
Born to celibacy, right? Yeah. It's forbidden love. They ended up getting together, fancying each other. They would meet at night, communicated through hidden messages and fucking all this, you know, sexy, spooky shit. Mm-hmm. And had plans of running away together. According to the story, the monk arranged for a horse-drawn carriage to take them away from Borley, but their plans obviously were foiled. They were captured by the local church authorities. The punishment for their fucking sins... this monk, he was executed by hanging, and the nun allegedly was sealed alive inside the walls of the convent as punishment.
Oh, Well, okay. I feel like that's way worse than hanging.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's way worse. Death by fucking starvation.
Like, what? Should they just both be hangs?
Yeah, it seems...
Which kicks in. I'm sure Braden's got a little bit about the Phantom Nun, but that's kind of, you know, I think that's where the majority of those sightings come from.
Well, there's just, like, there's so much. Like, every, like, there's different reverends, Reverend Guy Eric Smith. They experienced poltergeist activity, stones being thrown at them, keys vanishing, message on their mirror saying, "Marianne, please help get," which referred to a latter resident, I guess. And the people were like, people would message.
That Smith family, part of that was they found a human skull wrapped in a brown paper bag while they were cleaning the place out.
Yeah, dude. And like before that, Henry Bull, lived there. He had 14 kids and they would be like, the Phantom Nun would walk the grounds and like freak the fuck out of the kids. And they'd see shadowy figures and unexplained footprints and bells ringing all the time. Like fucking Vecna.
I feel like this guy's probably just trying to scare his kids to death because none of these guys back then planned on having 14 kids. They had 14 kids because, you know, at least six of them are dying.
Yeah.
Right. But if all 14 are still
gotta hedge
around,
your bets,
then you
got to
do something
back.
Yourself. You got to take your own hands.
You got to take care of this shit. Yeah.
So then, like, this is like one of the cases I love because Harry Price, like, you know, hears these tales, and it just so happens that, like, in 1937, this place is vacant, and he gets to go visit it. And this place, I think he spends a weekend there originally, just kind of like checking it out. And it fascinates him so much that he leases it for a year. Yeah. He's like, all right, well, we're going all in. So something in this house in that weekend was like, he's like, there's something to this. And again, I point this out because I'm like, this is a guy that is like.
You sure he wasn't just trying to get a deal on rent? Listen, the place is fucking haunted, man.
Yeah.
You got to knock 50 bucks off.
He's like, please. But it's like, so it's interesting because it's like, again, he's made his claim to fame is basically debunking, and he sees this, and like he's never done anything like this, and all his like most prominent books are from this next year that he spends in the Borley Rectory, and like he documents, he gets 48 volunteers. They do, you know, they have strict protocols with sealing rooms, signed logs, equipment, like trying to check all the boxes to make sure they like, you know, are doing everything where hoaxes cannot be happening. Yeah.
This was like the first large scale ghost investigation that like it ever happened. Like he took out a want ad in the paper to be like, what was it? People of leisure to come live here
for a year.
People of leisure, you know, was it science minded, non-biased, like all of this stuff, a description in there, but basically, you know, recruiting all of these people to come in. And he's like, it was the first time you're being like, you know, you could be a ghost hunter yourself. I'll train you in the ghost hunting techniques. And like,
basically he wanted shift workers, like 24/7. He had people there like monitoring the house and monitoring the activity. And like reports included phantom footsteps and voices, objects moving, disappearing, objects being thrown, broken, a nun figure seen in windows and on the grounds, like by different people, mysterious lights and cold spots being picked up by instruments and bells ringing and being picked up by audio recordings. So it's like they had no idea. And this, like he documented this in his 1940 book, The Most Haunted House in England, which then made this like a fucking thing, you know what I mean? Yeah. People are like, holy fuck, we know all about this. But again, it's like, he instantly gets shit on for this. People are like, he's so full of shit. He was planting all this shit. Like, people are so quick to like, and this is the guy that does that. You know what I mean? This is the guy that fucking poo-poos.
This is the guy that realized that debunking didn't pay very well, but writing books about haunted fucking places pays fucking great.
Or it's a guy, or, I'll give you that caveat, but or this is a guy that spent his whole life loving this thing and wanting it to be true, and then finding, like when we find a really interesting case where there's something to it, and he's like, holy shit, there's something here I can't fucking explain. This is legit. Like, there's something really here. And that's why his obsession and to write books, because I think he ends up writing like 6 books that about this place.
The Borley Rectory is probably his big one. But it would also be one of his most controversial ones, because the SPR like would come out and just like
they just like fuck this guy,
lambasted him about that shit. They'd be like, yeah, they were just. They're like, yeah, no. So we got some people saying that you faked it, that you, a lot of the stuff that they saw, you know, rocks getting thrown, these things, like you did those.
It was
yourself.
You.
Like, you know what I'm saying? It was you.
You were wearing a cheat.
But also, besides doing like haunted house investigations, like Harry Price, the other one that I thought was really funny, and it's one of his more high profile cases, is that he had like the, it was called The Exposure of Helen Duncan in 1931. So before.
Ooh, was this the
This is like the, I thought that I read this and I was like, holy shit, this must have been fucking crazy. So Helen Duncan was at the time, I guess, the UK's most famous medium. And one of her things that
like
she was
long,
known for.
Like for new listeners, like the Long Island medium, right?
Yeah. And what she was known for, or at least like during her seances, was producing ectoplasm, which was
out of all her orifices.
Yeah. Which back then was believed to be a very, a very real thing, this physical manifestation.
And it is still real. It's a real thing. It's just much more rare than we thought.
Good me, Ray. this is the physical manifestation of like spiritual interaction with the material world.
Yeah.
When they transition dimensions, like ooze and ectoplasm.
Yeah, exactly. And
so she was a portal?
She's legal.
Yeah.
So of course Harry Price, is like, high profile case. Hey, come on down to the National Laboratory for Circuit, come down to the lab and we'll test this. And if you're legit, you're legit, So I think they paid her, which was another thing that he was known to do, was that he would pay a lot of these mediums as a way of compensating them. Cause like, well, you have to take the day off of work. So,
I would say that a lot of these mediums are more than likely grifters. So the getting a payday to them is probably, to the ones that are grifting, it's like, well, I might as well go and get paid anyways and try to fool this guy.
Yeah, I guess to make some money off of it anyways, before I get totally busted. And it does also kind of boggle my mind that it's like a lot of these mediums would still go. Like, he's known for busting people. He's going to catch you. Like, or, if you're like, are you that, do you think you're that good that you're going to?
Well, I think that's part of the high, right? Thinking that you can fool anybody.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, that makes sense.
And I guess that must have been what Helen thought going into it. Cause Harry already kind of had the idea in his head, like that what she was doing is like, it was actually like this ectoplasm was actually some sort of like cheesecloth soaked in fat and probably egg whites. It was something that she would swallow it and then regurgitate it back up later, like during the seance or whatever, which I guess is known as rumination. Like, I guess that's a thing. Andrew,
or fucking
medical
rumination. Bulimia.
Rumination. Yeah. Well, it's like, it's not like, it's like an involuntary thing. It was what I was reading. And it's like, it usually happens like just like in almost clockwork, like 15 minutes, like you eat something or whatever. And then like 15 minutes later, it just like bleh, and just comes back up or something.
Oh, that's like me when I eat a Blizzard. Yeah. If I eat a Dairy Queen Blizzard, like 15 minutes later, I can just right back into the cup.
In the same consistency that it went in as.
Yeah, just I could fill the cup back up perfectly and just like put it back on the counter.
Can you turn it upside down? After?
No.
But they tried everything with her. I mean, they busted out the x-ray machine. Like, he demanded that she have an x-ray of her stomach to see if she actually had any, like, if she is keeping this stuff in there, this cheesecloth, which might show up. I don't think they actually found, like, when they took the x-ray, I don't think it was actually, like, is easy to see her.
It was her maid ratted her out, wasn't it?
That was one of the things I think they did. But they actually, like, I think they caught her. Kind of because they were like, they're trying to x-ray her stomach and then she's like freaking out, I guess. Like, there's the whole thing. It's like, I guess she went into some kind of trance or seizure. And then they say she suddenly leapt up. She hit a researcher. So she decked out one of his assistants and then ran into the street out of the lab and was just screaming fire until like her husband had to actually like catch her and physically restrain her.
Commit to the bit, man.
Just going nuts.
That's good.
But there's some stuff like his his quotes from like what like his autobiography or whatever. It's like the sight of half a dozen men, each with a pair of scissors, waiting for the word was amusing. It came and we all jumped. One of the doctors got hold of the stuff and secured a piece. The medium screamed at the rest of screamed and the rest of the teleplasm went down her throat. This time it wasn't cheesecloth. I proved it to be paper soaked in white of egg and folded into a flattened
white
tube
of egg.
Could anything be more infantile? Than a group of grown men wasting time, money, and energy on the antics of a fat female crook. I don't know why I had the fat in there. That's for me. Harry Price doesn't fuck around, I guess. Yeah.
But that's, dude, like when you look at what he did, and then like to me, when you look at that and then you see how fascinated he was with the Borley like rectory, to me it makes me think that he legit was like, there's something I can't explain here. I don't know what's going on. And that's why it fascinated him so much. Like, again, I mean, six books, you know, we joke and we can say like, oh, you know, that's where the money is. But it's like also like this was his passion, was trying to find something. And if he actually found something there, you think that would, like, why keep looking for something weird when you're like, I know this right here is the proof I'm looking for. Is this right here? And then it like consumes him of just like, all I can think about is this because it's so fucking weird. I don't care about other people faking shit. I found the real thing here in these studies.
One thing like also too, like I don't want to shit on that because that could very well be the case. But like from what I was trying to look into, I couldn't really find out because like you said, this is kind of what the Borley
Rectory.
I want to say refractory.
It's a tough word.
Rectory. So the Borley
Rectory.
Rectory. The Borley Rectory. That's kind of his big story. That's where all his books come out. This is where he gets his traction. And then pretty much the accounts of his previous encounters and experiments and stuff, that kind of comes from him after the fact while he's already famous. Like there's not really like a bunch of books about him debunking a bunch of shit, and he wasn't famous back then for that. Like this is all kind of shit that we're hearing from old Harry P.
Yeah.
From what I could find. So it's like, is he using that to build credibility for this?
In the past, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
I get that. But at the same time, like the
like he wrote his autobiography.
Well, that's why it's called an autobiography. It's in the name.
Or he wrote his biography, right? Like this is all coming from him, right?
Yeah, it's all coming from him. Yeah. I mean, like I said, the Brocken experiment was 32. Like he was already kind of known for what he was doing. Like he was still had some credibility to his name.
He
like,
wasn't
already.
As famous. I'll give you that.
Yeah,
he wasn't as famous. Borley Rectory put him on like superstardom, but he was known.
And you're like, and that was kind of, you know, I guess
the guy had what 14,000 books and pamphlets that he donated,
big ass library,
right? Like, of just magic and cults and anything kind of weird that he donated to the fucking university.
It is a pretty cool. It kind of makes me want to, like, if I'm ever in London, I want to check it out.
Oh, hell yeah.
I'm like, that's pretty neat.
It's like a whole wing.
Yeah, it's a whole bunch of books. It's just all it is about magic and ghosts and you know, psychic phenomenon. Like, that's all it is. And I'm like, that's pretty neato.
Fact that, like, he collected and then donated, like, in his death, he was like, donate all my work to the, like, you know, that could have been in a private, that could have gone to, you know, passed down with the estate.
Buddy, Matt Rife would have bought it.
100%. You know, a museum, they could have set up a museum. But like just to donate that work because you wanted more people to be interested in the subject and be able to research it. I was like, it's fucking, I'm like, that's what interests me the most about this guy is I'm like, fuck man, I wish the Borley Rectory didn't burn down. Like it's gone now.
It's like the I think library it's just a vacant.
Yeah, but it released
it's a vacant.
The burning
lot.
Of the building released more fucking paranormal activity. Is what
people
he said.
Do say around the area.
It opened the gates to hell.
My God, I've only seen this once before.
Wasn't there a goat? Didn't they find a goat?
They did.
It's all coming together.
I think the UFO Cowboys did find a goat.
It's all coming together.
But Harry died and was a heart attack in 1948. And then, you know, I guess he was just basically just sitting in his armchair with a copy of The Times is what they said. So it's a very inauspicious way to go out, but for him. But yeah, his legacy lives on with that the library of Harry Price Library of Magical Literature still lives on. And very much a lot of the stuff that he pioneered, like still rolls, like his little ghost hunting kit, like pretty much hasn't really been, it's been updated a little bit. When you see like ghost hunters and stuff like that, you're like, no, Harry Price had that stuff. Like it's very much a lot of those things he kind of made and clever a bit. So yeah, it's like he leaves a lasting legacy on the paranormal research. You know, those who take it seriously, or you know, and or you know, or it's just someone out for the headlines. And you know, I guess that maybe that's just two facets of the paranormal researching thing. There's people who are genuinely interested in it, and you know, trying to figure it out. And everybody says, "Oh, these guys are just out to debunk everything." But it's like, no, they're just doing stuff, and it's just a lot of the people who are doing these things happen to be fraudsters. Like, you know, it's like,
I mean, it's same with us. Like, I mean, there's so few real UFO cases that I truly believe after looking into so many that we've looked into. But I'm like, there's ones that stand out for me where I'm like, don't know, man, there's 5%. Something weird there. There's something
once
weird.
Once you've done a bunch and you're like, okay, like there's some legit ones though. You're like, yeah, no, I can get behind this like 100% that this was a real UFO that you saw. And other ones you're like, not so much.
There's one more thing that we know that Harry Price was legit, because just before the dawn of World War II, the Nazis came calling.
Yeah.
And you know that the Nazis were into anything occult, supernatural. They're trying their best to get whatever edge up on that they could. So they call Harry Price.
They were recruiting the fucking Avengers of magicians.
The best of the best sorcerers of the world at the time. Yeah.
They had a fucking Nick Fuhrer. We're putting together a team.
Yeah. I guess they called just before the dawn of World War II, and they offered Harry Price a position at the Nazi psychic lab that actually really never came to be because World War II started shortly after. But they offered it to him. He was considering it, but he was paid a visit by MI5 and said, "Stand down. Stand down. You can't go over there.
You're not going there."
So that's how you know he was legit, because they were trying to recruit the best of the best.
Yeah. I know. I read that chapter in his autobiography.
You're like, well, if he would, you know what? If he would have went over there, though,
wait, they would have won.
They might have got the Wonder Weapon and actually
they would have won.
So yeah,
that might have been the final fucking. That would have been the straw that tipped the war.
I can't believe you didn't laugh at my Nick Fuhrer joke, Andrew.
I laughed. I thought it was good.
I know. Everyone laughed except the Marvel guy. I thought for sure he was going to be like, yeah, that's great.
That's because he probably stole it from him earlier.
You know what it is? He probably thought it was too
good. Did you steal that joke from Andrew earlier or something in the pre-show or something?
No, I came up with Nick Fuhrer right now?
With nose on nose sleep, right on you came with that?
Right on the fly, man. It came to me. I pulled it from the Akashic Records.
Comedic genius.
Nick Fuhrer.
I like it.
He's definitely white. he doesn't turn black in the comics.
It's originally.
Anything else about old Harry P here?
That's Harry P.
Harry P.
Boys, I just want to say, fucking Nick Fuhrer breaking goat hymens. I think we're back to form. I think we're back. Maybe all we need to do is change that logo back. Hey,
change the logo back. What do we need? What do we got need left to bring it back to 2019?
People listening.
People listening. That would be the next step.
Yeah. Hey, baby steps, boys.
Baby steps. Yeah. Back to the new logo. Maybe Space News comes back. Who fucking knows?
Let's go.
Hey, who knows? Maybe it's Andrew doesn't do the Mongoose is dead, but there might be a new Mongoose just doing epic political rants every episode.
Yeah. Depends how many one-star reviews you want.
Whatever you can get us. You know what they say is bad press is good press, isn't that what it is?
Okay. Yeah, bad press. Or no press.
All press is good press.
Yeah.
Whatever the saying is. Anyways, this week we have one beauty.
Let's go.
Support the goddamn show. No.
This guy's not on the Epstein list.
He's definitely not on the Epstein list. Peppery. That's it. Right. His name's Peppery.
Let's go, Peppery. Let's go.
Actually, might have
read
that last
week. You on the Epstein bit list? You better fucking subscribe.
If you don't subscribe, and
yeah, the only way to get your name redacted if you think
all we know is Peppery isn't. Like that
is not.
That's it.
So we're looking at you right now.
If you're listening and you're like, fuck, I haven't read my name, that means you may be on the Epstein list.
You know what? There is a whole.
There's only one sure way to get off of it.
There is a whole online profile of you listening right now that we have. And if you don't support,
yeah, we should, dude, we should have a new low tier that's just like, just not on the list. I'm not, okay,
on the list.
All right.
Clean. Never communicated with Epstein.
And you can show that. If once you're on our Patreon and we confirm you're on the list, you can put it on your resume. And they can call us for verification that we'll you were not on the Epstein list. Yep.
We can be a reference for that.
For as little as $5 a month.
Can somebody named Bill please subscribe for next month?
Yeah.
Bill. Yeah. Skip
Bill. Oh, fuck. All right. But as we always say at the end of these things, keep those eyes on the sky.
See you in After Hours.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take 5 before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Let's chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.